Better podcasting from a broadcasting veteran. Welcome to the Pod to Pod podcast, where we explore the news, services, technologies, and advice that will help podcast producers and consumers. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm your host, Matthew Passy. On this episode, we have Mark Ramsey, veteran media strategist, researcher, consultant at markramseymedia.com, and now producer on a brand new project on an audio graphic novel with Wondery called Inside Psycho. It's a serialized look at the making of the classic film Psycho. Now, in this chat, Mark and I go through all the different things that he is seeing in the industry, what he's learned, and what he's seeing podcasters doing right and wrong. You are going to get a ton of valuable information, experience, and wisdom from Mark. We're going to talk a little bit about his project and some of the things that, you know, in creating this project that can also help you in your next venture. So really want you to stay tuned, listen to the whole thing. Mark's going to give you some really great advice if you stay through the entire time. So before we hit that chat with Mark, just please remember to check out pod2pod.com, your go-to resource for all things podcasting. There you can sign up for the weekly newsletter, check out the latest headlines, browse the directory of podcasting services, surf our calendar of podcasting events, and so much more. It's all at pod2pod, P-O-D-T-O-P-O-D.com. Now, here we go with Mark Ramsey. Very excited today to have on the Pod to Pod podcast, Mark Ramsey. Mark, thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure. You're not half as excited as I am.
So, Mark, you have been in around the media for a very long time. You have worked with some high-level talent, some big-level clients, and you have also probably experienced a lot of the day-to-day podcasters, some big and some small. And what are you finding are some of the biggest mistakes that average podcasters are making that they can learn from, you know, radio and from the broadcasting industry?
Well, honestly, I don't know that it's just about learning it from radio. It's just kind of best practices that are universal, that supersede anyone particular platform. For example, the way you open this up, I can tell you, is very good because you didn't do what a lot of people do in podcasts, which is go through long kind of backstories. which I find tremendously boring. When you've got a show that's about something that's relevant and in the moment, and you want to precede it by a backstory, you know, tell me, Mark, how you got started in media. Tell me about your first clients, and that goes on for 5 minutes. I mean, I hear that kind of stuff all the time, and I hear it on all kinds of podcasts, and it's just awful because people mistake the value of telling a story with the value of delivering that which the listener wants when the listener wants it. And those are two very different things.
So we have to be more focused on what our story is, but also what our listeners have come for. What is it exactly that they are trying to get with this time? Because they're not paying for the privilege of listening to podcasts, but they are giving us their time, which is very valuable.
Well, that's right. I mean, and you know, ultimately, people don't care to be my friend. They're listening to this show of yours for a particular reason, and they want to be delivered that value in as pithy a manner as possible. And that's your obligation, and that's my obligation. So, best that we get to it rather than skirt around it, and you know, with extensive introductions. And that's another thing I hear a lot of, is just extensive introductions. What'd you do last week? Where are you today? Let's talk about, you know, what's in the news before we get to the point of the show. And it's just off. That is the single worst thing that I hear, quite frankly, is just awful beginnings. And you know what? If only people knew what was happening to the listenership on a moment-by-moment basis, they would never do it the way they're doing it. They're mistaking that kind of they're mistaking the idea of building a relationship by getting to know me with what people really come to the podcast for.
But I guess to have a good conversation and to get to that content that the listener wants, the host and the guest do need a good relationship. So how do you get that going right off the bat and build that rapport that's going to make this content, you know, more appetizing to the listener?
Honestly, I don't really agree with that. I think you didn't ask me any backstory questions. You didn't pose anything to me designed to get to know me as a person. And, you know, the conversation's none the worse for it. Any kind of a journalistic enterprise has very little of that. It's really, you know, I think the idea is when you sit down in front of a microphone and you say, oh, I've got 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour, then you're looking to fill time rather than to create value. And if you look at it as value first rather than time first, then A, you'll end up probably with a shorter show, and B, it'll be a more valuable show, and C, more people will listen to it to the end.
No, that would be nice if more people were listening to the end. So what is it also that we know is going to make our content valuable? How do we know that what we are talking about, that what we are passionate about, is actually something worth downloading on the other end?
Well, this is another interesting thing. A lot of the shows that I see and hear about and listen to have kind of an overinflated sense of themselves. As in, you really want to hear me, right? And the answer is generally, no, I don't really want to hear you. I want to hear what you're talking about. I want to hear the value that you're creating that I can go and use, or the entertainment you're creating that I can, that can amuse me, or the information that you're providing that can inform me. I mean, what is the benefit that you're providing, and to whom are you providing it? Do you understand who the audience is and why they're there? That's, I think, a critical thing. One of the other things that I see and hear going wrong all the time is that people kind of, I think people have listened to so many radio shows that a lot of the shows they create in the podcast space are kind of mimicking those shows, imitations of those shows. And that's fine in isolation. But what people don't realize, I think, is that a radio show is always on. That a radio show has, by definition, no beginning and no end. It's always there. You know, when you listen to Rush Limbaugh, let's say, and I know you do, Matthew. When you listen to Rush Limbaugh, and it's, you know, it's a 3-hour show. I mean, it's, he's got 15 hours of content every week, right?
Right.
If you're going to listen, chances are you're going to listen while you're in the car. Chances are you're in a 20-minute drive. Chances are it'll be somewhere in the middle of his show. The beginning and end and middle of his show are all the same, because to you, the listener, you pop in and you pop out. There is no beginning. There is no end. You come in the middle. In fact, almost any time you listen to any radio show, you are entering that show in the middle. And the conversation that you're hearing is not the conversation you would expect to hear or need to hear at the beginning. It's the conversation you would expect or need to hear in the middle. So when people imitate a radio show in an on-demand world where people download that content and people start it at the beginning and end it hopefully at the end, there needs to be a beginning. There needs to be a beginning. There needs to be a middle, and there needs to be an end. So imitating the radio show, which is always in the middle, and then putting it into an on-demand podcast, which has a beginning, a middle, and an end, like television does, it just doesn't work. So that's why I think pacing ends up being a problem, and beginnings are almost always a problem. Length is usually a problem. Roles that the people on a show have are usually problematic. You know, in a radio show, people have specific roles. I'm the host. You're the co-host. You're color, you know, play-by-play, color. These are different roles, right? And people fulfill those roles, and that's how the show works. Very often, you have two people sitting around a mic. They're just jabbering. There are no roles. We're equal parties, right? We're going to talk whenever there's dead air. That's not a show. That's chaos.
I wonder, too, if when you're talking about the comparison from podcasting to radio and how, you know, radio does something very specific because of that dynamic, because people are constantly coming in and out every 15 minutes. They've got to constantly repeat who they are, what you're listening to, how to access it, things like that. Is that kind of necessary for a podcast? Not because people are constantly coming in and out, but because it's not just on. You have to go out there and get your hands on it. So do we need to sort of drill in that reminder? Here's the name of the show. Here's where you can access it. Here's how to download it. Here's how to follow us, all that stuff.
Not really. I mean, because that would be the job for the platforms around the show, wouldn't it? Not the show itself, because once you're consuming the show, you're consuming the show. I don't need to, when you're watching Taboo on FX, which I love, by the way, when you're watching Taboo on FX, it doesn't need to tell you, hey, you're watching Taboo. Taboo is on next week at this same time, which is FX, which is the following channel on your cable system. No, you're already there. The purpose of promotion is to bring people to that spot where you already are, right? Once they're there, the job that you have is to deliver on that expectation, to make the trip worthwhile.
Interesting. As I'm listening to you, not only am I trying to provide value to all of those podcasters who are listening, but I myself am taking notes, thinking to myself, okay, we're going to completely rework the introduction to the show. And maybe not this episode, but you know, going forward, I think, you know, definitely going to take a lot of this advice to heart. So also in podcasting, we have this ability to be super creative. We can do whatever we want with the medium. There's no rules. There's no restrictions. There's no timing, nothing like that. So are we seeing people who are doing enough to push the boundaries, or do you think we have plenty of room to go in podcasting?
Oh my gosh, there's so much room to go. I think if anything, what I see more of is less boundary pushing and more people kind of vanity casting.
Oh, I like that term, vanity casting. Okay.
Yeah, I just made that up on the spot, vanity casting. And, you know, which is, I want to do a podcast, you know, tell me what equipment I should use, tell me where I should host it, how many times should I tweet about it, how do I get more listeners to it? I mean, you know, people spend more time asking, how do I get more listeners to my show, than asking, how can I make my show better?
Mm.
And I think that's criminal, quite frankly, because, you know, ultimately, you make the best show you can, you make it fit the audience you want, and then it has to live out there. And then whether you're talking about a podcast or a television show or a movie, or a song, it's going to rise or fall based on its merits. And sometimes it'll catch a wave, you know, sometimes it'll be, Richard Simmons.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes you'll catch that wave and all of a sudden it'll become a meme. Most times it will not. But you don't get there by saying, you know, how do I get better? Can I get better equipment? Where can I host at a better place? Can I tweet more often? All of that. I mean, I've actually seen posts by people saying, you know, I want to create a podcast, but I don't know about what. Are you
then
kidding
why
me?
Are you, then why are you creating a
you
podcast?
Yeah, why, now, your desire to create a podcast is not more important than the content you wish to put out there. It should be the other way around. You know, otherwise, you're just playing games. I mean, that's vanity casting right there. So in answer to your point, yes, I think there aren't nearly enough experiments. I mean, look at the categories of podcasting that exist out there. The largest, you know, chunk of it is either, you know, a couple of guys sitting around talking about something, or it's comedy, or it's news and information that's either spawned from public radio or repurposed public radio or repurposed television.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those are the biggest categories. I don't think or it's business to business. You know, people trying to do podcasts about how to do better podcasts. People trying to do podcasts about how to get rich quicker. You know, that's business to business stuff. Podcasts for podcasters.
Hey,
now, yours is different. Yours is different because you're trying to provide news and information to people. You're not doing a how to. But I'm saying once you get past how to, oh, and lest I forget, true crime.
Oh, now, yes, that's becoming the new big one. Yeah.
How can I forget true crime? By the way, I mean, I always thought that it was kind of ridiculous because true crime has been, you know, a topic of interest for generations. Certainly it's been a staple on television forever. So now that it's a thing in podcasting, it to me only scratches the surface of what's available. But if we don't think more deeply about, you know, well, what is the potential for new and interesting content streams out there? And more to the point, how can we interest people who aren't already on the podcast train? In other words, the people who aren't already in the club and listening to podcasts and downloading podcasts and using that term and even understanding what that term is, you know, how do we reach people who aren't in that club? Unless we ask that question, that's the big question. And that's the question that's going to open up the market to people who aren't currently podcast users. What are the last year's statistics? Like 13% in an average week. I mean, that's just small. I'm sorry. But that's, you know, we can, you know, focus on awareness and focus on monthly usage, but anything you do once a month is not something you do much. So we really need to ask the question, why isn't this stuff more habitual? Why isn't it more in front of more people? Why aren't more people consuming it? And when we answer those questions, it's going to come down to ease of use, ease of access, and the raw attractiveness of the content.
So maybe something that would help some of our listeners too is you're working on a brand new project. It's described a serialized look at the making of the classic film Psycho. And so what was the, you know, what was the thinking behind that project? What led you to want to look at this in the way that you're going to be doing it with Wondery? Maybe understanding that thinking can help some people understand not to go out and emulate the model, but to how to think differently about approaching their next project.
Well, that's a good question. And I'm glad you asked it. And I'm going to take a moment because I just wrote down kind of all the things I was thinking of that supported why I did this. And I'm going to try and look up that list while I talk to you. But basically, first of all, it has to spring from what you're personally interested in, number one, right? And I'm on the board, among other things, among my work in the audio space and radio that you talked about. I'm also on the board of the Broadcast Film Critics Association and have been for many years. And we are the producers of the Critics' Choice Awards, which is one of the kickoff events for Oscar and Emmy in December this past year. It aired on A&E. And as a result, you know, I'm pretty deep in that category. I get all the DVDs in the fall for the movies and that kind of stuff. And one of the things that was always interesting to me was kind of the anecdotes behind the movies that are most famous. And not a kind of a film theory tour of these movies, but, you know, what are the kind of cool and interesting stories that relate to the movies and, you know, shows that we know already? In other words, let's start with something we know and then deepen it rather than start with something we don't know. I mean, a lot of storytelling involves stories that are original, and original stories are awesome, but original stories are also foreign, right? They're unfamiliar. They're new. And if we've learned anything from watching, say, oh, I don't know, Hollywood, what we've learned is that people love remakes. People love, you know, reimaginings. People love sequels. And the reason they love them is because they're pre-sold. They're already quantities that I'm familiar with. And that's certainly true of Psycho. So, you know, here's some of the things. And here's my list that I wrote down. I'm going to post on the blog tomorrow anyway. So, I mean, one is never before, to my knowledge, has there been a serialized look at the making of a classic movie for podcasting. I'm just not aware of it, ever. So in that sense, it's a brand new category. In fact, that's one of the way you described it is something I've finally come to. But, you know, when I first proposed it, the guys at Wondery were like, this is awesome, but what is this? It's not really docudrama. It's not radio drama. It's not documentary. It doesn't really fit a clean category, which I liked about it. It's the first project my company has ever done, which is intended towards for audiences rather than media professionals. Most of my work is business to business. I have another podcast I do with the brand consultant Tom Asacker called Media Unplugged, but all of that is B2B. It's not B2C. I wanted to do something which really pushed the boundaries because it's my opinion that people in radio have forgotten the power of audio. And people in podcasting generally never knew it to begin with. And that's mostly because people in radio bred it out of them.
The boundaries have long been, you know, we stopped pushing the boundaries in radio a long time ago, and I think the industry has gotten lazy, and so it is nice to see that a lot of folks frustrated by the limitations of radio are now, you know, taking to podcasting and trying to, you know, bust those open again.
That's right, and I think that's really, really key, because, I mean, even my production partner, Jeff Schmidt, said to me that, you know, he works for broadcasters, but he hasn't been asked to do a commercial in years. He barely does any. He said that's one of the first things he passes off to someone who's green is work for advertisers. So, which I found to be so ironic that here it is, the people who can benefit the most from the creativity of audio are the people who both expect and demand and receive the least that it can do. So I really wanted to create something that isn't like an audiobook, that's much, much richer than that, that really is written for sound, but is not played like radio drama, that has much more than just, you know, a standard audio bed, but has a really, really kind of active, soundscape associated with it, where the sound is one of the stars. The sound is probably the star of the show. And that's what I wanted to do.
Well, and it's probably easy to do because the sound was such an important part of the production itself, of the movie.
Well, it's interesting you say that, but as you know, there are rights issues. So if I'm to be clear of rights complications, that means I can't use any sound from the movie. I can't use any music from the movie. So what we did was we created a six-part, two-hour kind of tour inside the making of the movie, all the anecdotes, all the stories, all the drama, all the excitement, all the tragedy, and there was a lot of it, without using any audio from the movie. And if that's not a challenge, I don't know what is, but I just couldn't be more happy with it. I just couldn't be. People don't realize that, you know, at the heart of all these stories is really kind of an amazing larger story. And I realized while I was writing this thing that, you know, everyone looks back at Psycho and says, okay, well, it was a huge movie. Hitchcock was huge at the time. So why wouldn't he make a huge movie called Psycho? Well, Psycho was made on a dime. Psycho was an ugly duckling that nobody wanted, which is why Hitchcock had to ultimately buy back the rights and put his own money into it. He made it with his TV crew. There was a very real concern that this would be the biggest embarrassment of his proud and illustrious career when it came out, and he really didn't know what would happen. And just the fact that it worked out the way it did, and such that everything he did thereafter had to live in the reflection of that success, and none of it reflected well. And that's one of the stories I tell on the show when, you know, in the 70s, when he's kind of in his waning days, he's his last movie at Universal, and he has lunch with Bruce Dern, because Bruce is the star of the movie, Family Plot. And Bruce says, hey, you know, Steven Spielberg really wants to meet you. At that time, Spielberg had this little movie called Jaws that was breaking records. So here you have Hitchcock with Family Plot and Spielberg with Jaws operating at Universal around the same time. Jaws did, you know, many, many times the box office revenue of Family Plot. And Hitchcock just couldn't meet him. He couldn't meet him because he felt like a failure. Because he had taken a bunch of money to be basically the voice of the Jaws ride at Universal Studios theme park. And he just didn't have it in him to shake. He said, I couldn't even shake his hand. That's how he felt at the time. So it's that kind of, you know, amazing anecdote that reflects both the high and low, you know, the whole creative journey of this guy doing this crazy movie that changed so much. Oh, and I got to talk to the man who was one of the voices of Norman Bates' mother. So I got some great backstory there about what went into that. And it's just full of amazing anecdotes nobody's ever heard. And these are but more importantly, it's about a topic people have familiarity with. People know who Hitchcock is, even if they don't care who Hitchcock is. People know Psycho. They've probably seen it. Yeah, it's an old movie, but it's an old movie that resonates even today. In every serial killer brand you see, in Bates Motel on A&E, in the new documentary, I can't remember what it's called, all about the shower scene that's making the festival circuit right now. It couldn't be more relevant, even though it's, you know, 50, 60 years old.
See, and I something I think people really need to pay attention to in hearing what you just said. Mark is a longtime media and broadcasting professional, and regardless of all of that, the one thing I'm hearing in this whole thing and talking about this project is the way you are, for lack of a better term, geeking out over it. It is bringing out like the innermost childlike passion for a topic that you love, that you said you're truly passionate about. You're just genuinely interested in, and maybe if there wasn't, you know, if there was no money behind it, something that you would probably want to create in and of itself. And I think that's what has to come out of everybody when they want to do their next podcast, when they want to work on their project. If you are doing we don't talk about podcasting here because, oh, we think that's going to be, I genuinely love it. I'm genuinely curious. Everybody I talk to, like, I am actually wondering what they're doing. I'm curious to try it out. I'm geeking out over the technology, whatever it is. Like, I want to talk to these people and learn more. And it's that kind of passion and geeking out. Like, if you're not willing to be called a nerd or a geek or whatever it might be about that topic, then yeah, maybe you are just vanity casting, as Mark trademarked here earlier on the show.
Well, you know, I mean, even still, geeking out is kind of a pejorative, but consider it just being a fan, right? And conveying stuff that would be of interest to other fans. There's a huge market for that nowadays. You know, every so often I'll bag a ticket to Comic-Con because I live in San Diego. I mean, that is ground zero for fans. And that is also ground zero for everything that comes out of Hollywood on a 12-month period thereafter. It is just huge, and it's all because of fans. So unless you start with the assumption that we're going to create something that appeals to a base of fans, assuming you're doing something for entertainment, as I am, I mean, that's what this is. This is entertainment. This is not information. This is not going to make you richer. This is not going to make you a better podcaster. This is not going to, you know, this is not going to inform you. And this is something else. This is something designed really to say, wow, this is fun to listen to. I enjoy listening to this. This is what audio should be, in my view, is something that's just purely pleasurable, to experience. Not only that, but it's the kind of content that has legs, assuming it has any legs. That, well, you know, it's evergreen. I mean, it's evergreen. So I can listen to this on Halloween night, 2018, and it'll be as good as it is today. That really has value. In other words, we're thinking of this more as a TV show than as a podcast per se. You know, there are two ways you can think of podcasts. One is kind of as a weekly event that's disposable, the way a radio show is, you know, mm-hmm. The way TV news is, the way TV news on podcasts are, certainly it's disposable. Or you can think of it as, well, it's got a beginning, a middle, and an end. It's a six-part series. It's progressive. And that's going to be good anytime. That's why TV shows have lifespans, you know? That's why people want to see repeats.
Right. That's why after a show runs, it runs in syndication, and then it sells on DVDs, and, you know, then it comes back around once again for everybody to watch it, and the fans will watch it every single time it's available to them.
I mean, I'll tell you one thing that occurs to me as I look at the top ranks of the podcast charts. I keep thinking, how come this looks so different from what people watch on TV? How come it's just the categories look so different? And that, to me, speaks to the upside, the potential. Because that 13% listening to the podcast every week is not necessarily characteristic of the other 87%. And those other 87%, however, are watching TV, regardless of platform. They're watching it. And I think it's so interesting. And that's why I think the big challenge is, you know, I, and this some people are not going to like, but I appreciate this hashtag tripod thing. I get it, right? But I just think it's so woefully insufficient to the task. Because ultimately, if you want to grow the market for this content, it's not going to be because one person shares it with another because you ask them to. And it's not going to be because one person demonstrates to another how to access a podcast, which is a losing battle. It's going to be because the content demands it, and because the content itself, in other words, it's that good, that attractive for whatever, in whatever dimension, attractive means. And it is unavoidable. It is literally in their way. I can't state the importance of that enough, is having this content be in their way. And you can call that promotion. You can call that syndication. You can call it whatever you want, but it's got to be in their way. The idea that people run into it by accident, for example, that's how every single radio show is built. Because people run into it by accident. Why? Because they all listen to the radio. The radio's all in their car. They're punching their buttons. So all these happy accidents end up creating listeners, which end up creating fans. We have to think more about putting this content in people's way. Well, how do we go about doing that? Honestly, one of the best ways of doing it is radio. Radio is the ultimate in terms of making content impossible to avoid because it's linear. You know, when I listen to a station, I can only listen to whatever's on it right now unless I change the station. That's it. And that's how all these shows get started. I think people forget, conveniently, I might add, that when cereal, you know, the legendary cereal, All Bow to Cereal, was launched, it was launched as an episode of This American Life on the radio. People forget that.
But how do individuals who might not have that ability, might not have that access, how do they get in people's way with a podcast?
Well, you have to, I wouldn't discount the idea of getting a show on the radio, by the way. I wouldn't discount that at all. I was talking to one of the Wondery guys the other week, and I said, how come radio stations aren't airing podcast content? Let's be honest, after 10 o'clock at night, there's pretty much nothing on the radio that's better than a podcast. I mean, that is just a fact. So why wouldn't? And his answer was, well, because they're looking for someone to do it first and no one's done it first yet. Well, I mean, true as that may be, that's also really pathetic. So I think it's fair to say, find the first, you know, be the first. Get that person to do that deal. Doesn't matter whether the station's large or small. The market is big or small. Whether it's on multiple stations or one. You know, if you can get your show at midnight, 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night, I don't care. One night a week, five nights a week, seven nights a week, I don't care. Then that's putting it in the way of people. And that's also a new distribution channel, because if there's anything else I believe about podcasting, it's that we got to stop thinking about this like its own silo and start recognizing it's part of a larger tapestry called audio. You know, God bless podcast movement, but it's so podcast centric that what it should be is podcast content centric and distribution channel indifferent. That's the win. So that's way number one. Don't give up on radio, or put differently, you know, don't take no for an answer. Way number two, I think, is, you know, you got to hustle. You got to hustle. Look, what's one of the great ways of getting more attention to your podcast? It's by interviewing someone with a bigger audience than yours. I mean, that's classic, right? At this point, it's classic. Because the person you interview socializes your content, and now, you know, Tim Ferriss is on this call. Did you know that? He's in the background. So make sure to tweet that out, Tim. Yeah, so Tim will tweet it out that he's on this call with you and me, and now all of a sudden Tim's audience checks it out, and that boosts its numbers. So, you know, obviously that's another familiar way. But making it unavoidable means putting it in the way of people, using whatever resources are at your disposal. I mean, if you've got this is why, you know, the podcasts are happening for USA Today and the Wall Street Journal and Slate. I mean, would Slate be doing podcasts if they didn't have a well-established digital platform first? I don't think so. You know, would The Hollywood Reporter have a podcast if they weren't also The Hollywood Reporter? I don't think so. You know, the platform comes first. The platform creates the audience, the eyeballs, the ears, and then comes the podcast. So that's another opportunity, which is team up with a platform and partner with a platform that is aligned with your mission and your audience and your vision. That would be another great way, because it's all about ears and attention, right? No matter how you get it. I know our Media Unplugged podcast that Tom and I do, one of our distribution partners is Media Village, which is a really well-established platform for media professionals. And they run our podcast every 2 weeks.
You're right. It's all just about identifying the right audience and talking to the right people and just getting in the way. And I want to thank you very much for helping, talking to us and getting in our audience's way. We've been talking to Mark Ramsey, veteran media strategist, researcher, consultant at markramseymedia.com, and now producer of a brand new project. It's an audiographic novel with Wondery called Inside Psycho, and it's a serialized look at the making of the classic film. You can find out more about it at insidepsycho.com. Mark, it has been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us here on Pod to Pod and for getting in our audience's way.
Matthew, thank you so much for the great honor. It's my pleasure.